morning, everyone. It's funny. God knows all things. And it was interesting as leading up to today, I was thinking of how he truly does know all things, because I was thinking how today is 9/11, and then we've got like a meeting afterwards, and it's the start of the football season. Yeah. And so there's all these things that are coming together, and I was thinking, man, why is he doing all this? Like, because I want to keep it short, you know. I want to get us out of here in a relatively brief time, and I've been challenging. It was interesting because, well, he just took it back, but I was just thinking about how that clock doesn't have a battery in it. And so, you know, under normal circumstances, see, they're already laughing because they know we might be in some danger of me going a little bit over, but not today. Because Ben has so graciously given me his phone to help me keep time. And what I want to do in continuing with our series on faith is look at a concept that we probably use quite a bit, or at least we've heard. It's a term called blind faith. And over time, things have changed in how people look at what the meaning of blind faith is, what that term actually is used for. And it's interesting because when we think about blind faith and its origins, most of us can pretty easily recognize that it is Noah, where it all kind of begins. And yet, today when people talk about it, it usually means you're foolish or you haven't properly done your research, or you don't know what you're getting into, and you're just blindly jumping into something. There's all different types of ways in which it is interpreted. But what I want to look at today is, in fact, Noah. And we'll give the sermon a title, Up Faith Creek Without a Paddle, or God is My Storm Tracker. And I want us to really take this time over the next 20 minutes or so and really think about what blind faith is as we go through and look at Noah. Now, I want to start here. There's this video. I normally wouldn't do this, but I want you guys to see this video. This is quite amazing. You won't be able to hear it, but what you see here is, anybody ever know what the trust fall is? Okay, so this little girl is learning what it is to have faith in her friends, and so she says, on the count of three, you're going to fall, and I'm going to catch you. One, two, three. Yes. Now watch what happens. It's not over. Because she's mad about this, right? She is angry because she fell forward, and a girl is laughing at her, and she's saying, well, you're supposed to fall backwards. And you see her feeling, you know, her little feelings are hurt and everything. And one of the things about blind faith is sometimes we forget that even blind faith comes with instructions. Like, even blind faith requires you to do something. You still have to follow what it is that God wants you to do. And so I want to start. How many of you all have ever heard of a town called Williamstown, Kentucky? Anybody? Well, I know my wife knows. I see a couple people that know. Yes, there's some Kentucky people here. Williamstown, Kentucky. It's a little town. It's right outside of Dry Ridge, which is a major exit on Interstate 75. It's about roughly 40 miles south of Cincinnati. And Williamstown was actually one of those places where I never stopped. As many times I went back and forth from Atlanta to Cincinnati going up Interstate 75, I never stopped there because there's nothing there. Williamstown, I believe the population is roughly about 3,200 people. There's nothing special about Williamstown until this guy decided to build a life-size actual replica of Noah's Ark. Yeah. And so you can go there, take kids there, go through this tour. You can get, he literally went back and did the research and talked about, you know, how to translate the cubits to the inches and meters and all this kind of stuff. And so he built this life-size replica of Noah's Ark. And people go there now, and they get little souvenirs and everything. And Noah is actually one of those stories that you, quite frankly, don't have to be a Christian. You don't have to be religious at all. But somebody makes a reference to Noah, you know, they know what you're talking about. And if you think about how many times Noah has been depicted in, like, movies, and you guys have probably seen, this one just came out, I believe, last year, Russell Crowe. And then my favorite was this one. Heaven Almighty. I won't make anybody do the dance, but if you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. But we have all these depictions of Noah, just like we have this understanding of what blind faith is. But I want us to really look at what it means, because people focus so much on the ark that they forget why Noah was actually commended for his faith. And it wasn't necessarily just the ark. And so what I want to do here is turn with me over to Genesis chapter 6. And we'll start in verse 5. It says, "The Lord saw how great man's wickedness on the earth had become, and that every inclination of his thoughts, of his heart, was only evil all the time. The Lord was grieved that he had made man on earth, and his heart was filled with pain. So the Lord said, I will wipe mankind, whom I have created, from the face of the earth, men and animals, and creatures that move along the ground, and birds of the air, for I am grieved that I have made them. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord." This is the account of Noah. I'm going to pause right there for just a second. We see there where it says all of mankind was just out there running loose. They had no reverence for God. They had no respect for him, no concept of him. They weren't living to love him, serve him. But in verse 8 it says, "But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord." And I want to continue reading. It says, "This is the account of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, blameless among the people of his time, and he walked with God. Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight and was full of violence. God saw how corrupt the earth had become, for all the people on the earth had corrupted their ways. So God said to Noah, I'm going to put an end to all people, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. I am surely going to destroy both them and the earth. So make yourself an ark of cypress wood, make room in it, and coat it with pitch inside and out." This is how you are to build it. The ark is to be 450 feet long, 75 feet wide, and 45 feet high. Make a roof for it and finish the ark to within 18 inches of the top. Put a door in the side of the ark and make lower, middle, and upper decks. I'm going to bring floodwaters on the earth to destroy all life under the heavens, every creature that has the breath of life in it, everything on the earth will perish. But I will establish my covenant with you, and you will enter the ark, you and your sons and your wife and your sons' wives with you. You are to bring into the ark two of all living creatures, male and female, to keep them alive with you. Two of every kind of bird, of every kind of animal, and of every kind of creature that moves along the ground will come to you to be kept alive. You are to take every kind of food that is to be eaten and store it away as food for you and for them. And it says, verse 22, Noah did everything just as God commanded him. Now I want to take a minute to look at this, because over the next few minutes here, as we're breaking down this blind faith, I want us to look at what Noah was commended for and how we can apply this to our lives, because it says Noah did everything just as God commanded him. And so what I want us to do is start, and we're going to ask some questions. What made Noah blameless? And in some translations, it says perfect. I want to understand what that is, because I was thinking to myself, well, clearly nobody's perfect, so you know, nobody's blameless. We all have blame. So what exactly is the scripture talking about here? How did Noah find favor with God? What does it mean to find favor with God? How can we find favor with God? And what exactly did Noah do? What were his actions? What was behind his actions? So to start, let's look in 1 Timothy. And what we'll find in 1 Timothy is a passage to give us a little idea about what it means to be blameless. It says, now the over in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 2 and 3, it says, now the overseer is to be above reproach, faithful to his wife, temperate, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not given to drunkenness, not violent, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not a lover of money. Now, in context, this passage is talking about overseers, and these would be the people who are the trustees and the overseers of the church. And it's giving this definition, if you will, this kind of broad net that allows us to be able to know, well, who's actually qualified to hold that position? Who's actually qualified to do this? And it starts by saying that the overseer is to be above reproach. Now, if you were to translate what it was talking about in Genesis here, when it says that Noah was blameless, that's what he was saying. He was saying that blameless is synonymous with being above reproach. And if you look up the word reproach and you look up the definition of it, reproach is related to shame and disgrace. What God was saying was that Noah, because he was a man who was above reproach, because of his character, because of his unwillingness to succumb to what the world was doing and being committed to living in a way that was pleasing to God, even though everybody around him was not, that is what made him qualified. That is what put him in the place where God was able to say, you know what, I'm going to select you to do what I ask. It meant that God said, you know what, he's not going to shame me. I'm not going to be embarrassed to be associated with Noah because of his life and who he was. And the same thing holds true to us. The same thing applies to us. How we live, our willingness to commit to following Christ, that is what makes us qualified to do what it is that God asks us to do. That is what it meant to be blameless. But then we take it a step further, and going back to the video about reading the instructions, because just because you're going to do what God asks you to do, we saw here, and the reason why I read through that whole thing, even though most of us know the story, is because actually Noah's faith wasn't really blind, because he was given specific instructions. He was told what was going to happen. There was nothing about it that was blind, but he had to resist being tempted and resist the temptation of being discouraged. Well, why would he be discouraged? Well, building this boat took a long time. And going back to Genesis again, it says that Noah did everything just as God commanded him. And so when we think of what is that everything, you know, not just following the instructions. One of the things that we sometimes forget is that, and I believe it's in 2 Peter chapter 2, where it says that he was a preacher of righteousness. One of the things we fundamentally forget about Noah following the instructions of God was that he didn't just follow the instructions and do everything he was asked to do in building this gigantic boat in the middle of dry land, nowhere close to water, but he told the people the truth. He warned the people. He was the person that God chose to go out and tell the people, God is not going to tolerate this much longer. You have to get right. Get on the boat. His obedience was proof of his faith, not just his words. It wasn't just a theory. It wasn't just coming up with the right doctrine. His obedience and following the instructions, not just in building the boat, but also in being that preacher of righteousness, like it talks about in Second Timothy. We see that he followed all the instructions. He followed them completely. Do we follow the instructions that the Lord gives us completely? Or do we follow what we want, what's comfortable, what's easy? Because that's putting faith into action when you're following the instructions that you've been given completely. Whenever you're out there and you're at your job or your school or whatever you're doing, and it can become easy for people to possibly ridicule you or look at you. I had a situation that happened last week where I was given a check. I cashed the check. The lady gave me $100 extra more than I was supposed to have. Now, my thought was, first of all, I don't want to have my integrity being challenged over $100. I mean, it's important. I need $100, but I don't need it enough that I know God's watching, right? And so I wanted to go back, and I was interested because I was talking to my wife about this, and I was saying, actually she had just gotten home, and I said, I want to make sure I do this because I don't want her to lose her job. I don't want her to get in trouble. I don't want to be in a situation where she ends up, because frankly, it could have just very well been an innocent mistake. It may not have been her fault. I don't know. But I go back to the bank. She would not talk to me. I said, no. I said, I just left here a few minutes ago. I'd probably only been gone 20 minutes, and she was still there. She refused to talk to me. And so the other tellers, they were kind of like, well, look, she doesn't want to talk. Maybe you just need to see a manager. And I thought, no, I know how banks work. I'm going to take my $100, and I'm going to go back here, and I'm going to wait because you're going to call me when at the end of the night, your balance comes up wrong. And so, like clockwork, they called me the next week, and she actually called. And I said, well, here's the thing. I tried for like 10 minutes to get you to understand that there was a mistake. And it wasn't my mistake. It wasn't something that was going to hurt me. I got an extra $100. But I wanted to get it back to you. And I told the young lady, I said, I want you to understand, that's part of customer service. I'm trying to warn you, because ultimately, if I had given her the $100 back and she caught the mistake, she doesn't get written up. She may have had this problem in the past, and so therefore, they keep records of this type of thing. And I'm thinking, I'm trying to warn you. I'm trying to help you out, but you're not heeding my warning. It was a challenge of integrity for me, but it was more about her not being willing to listen when someone is trying to give you a warning. In Hebrews chapter 11, let's turn there. Hebrews chapter 11, in verse 7, it says, by faith Noah, when warned about things not yet seen, in holy fear, built an ark to save his family. By his faith, he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness that comes by it. An heir of the righteousness, and he condemned the world with his faith. Through his faith and his willingness to be obedient to God, Noah built something that no one had ever seen. No one even had a concept of it. It is widely considered that Noah had never even seen rain to that point. Rain that would have even made sense. Like some of us who like grow up in like areas where there's hurricanes, like if you grew up in North Carolina, Florida, somewhere on the coastline, you know what it's like to see rain because you've seen hurricanes. You see it twice a year, sometimes multiple times, and you've seen the destruction. Noah had never seen that. Noah had no idea. And not only that, he wasn't even close to water. Now, you could say, well, even if he was close to water, who's going to be able to push this thing into the water? I mean, how much tide can rise to bring this gigantic thing out there? But the point is, his faith allowed him to follow through on what God's promise was and what God commanded him to do. I was, and I've mentioned this before, but I was so encouraged a couple months ago. It was two ladies who came here to visit, and they hadn't been here since they were young, and they were talking about, the one lady in particular was talking about her father used to be here. He was like with a lot of the founding members, and you know, I was just thinking, and I've really been thinking a lot about that, because I was thinking the people who started this church, and you know, she was talking about how, like, you know, Kay was a little girl, you know. I remember I was talking to Donna Grimm, and she was telling me about how when she was younger, and just how when they were obedient to God and starting this congregation and wanting to make sure that there was a place for us to be able to worship, all of these 50, 60 some odd years later, they had to have faith in something that they couldn't see. They had to be willing to build something, sacrifice for something, and frankly, who knows? I have no way of knowing what ridicule may have come to them or what the challenges may have been. But that, frankly, is the definition of faith. It's not blind faith. All faith is blind faith. It's like my dad used to say, if you could see it, it's not faith. Because there's no challenge for you. You can see it. You can witness it. And the question I have is, can we build something that's never been seen before? Can we, in our own personal life, in our own personal walk of faith, can we build something that's never been seen before? Can we do something that's never been seen before? Are we aggressive enough and humble enough and obedient enough to be like Noah in building something that no one's ever seen before? You might think, well, I mean, there's churches out there, there's ministries out there, and we do things in likeness to other things that we've seen be successful. But what if Dover needs something? What if our community needs something that's never been seen before? What if God is challenging us to do something because he's saying, you know what? This situation is different. I want you to do something that may be a challenge to your faith. Is your faith ready for greatness? It's often been said, before you can be great, you got to first be good. And I think a lot of times it's important to remember that, just like with Noah and how he was above reproach, how he was someone who was blameless, it's important that we understand also that with that being above reproach and being blameless and having the integrity that it takes, that is the stepping stone to greatness. Now, Noah, I don't know what he thought as far as whether or not he felt like he was doing something great. But looking back on it, we now know that it was. When we think of the instructions that Noah was given, and it goes through, and in our translation here in the NIV, it goes through all of the different, you know, feet and inches. Where that wasn't what he got, because they didn't have that system of measurement at the time. But he was to warn people. And he's telling them, no, I'm building this boat so that we can escape the destruction that's coming. If you think about early warning, one of the things that happened, I don't know if you guys remember, but during Hurricane Katrina, which is probably the one thing in this country in recent memory that we can equate to some type of destruction that would even be close to the level. You think of how the biggest, and I remember one of the people for the some weather service or who measures things, in the climate, they said the biggest problem with Hurricane Katrina was when people were told to get out, they wouldn't leave. The water itself was bad. The levees breaking, all those things were bad. But the biggest problem, and the reason why there were so many people that died and suffered, was because when they were told to get out, they wouldn't leave. This is a picture of New Orleans shortly after the actual storm itself had gone, but you saw all of this flooding for miles. You see people who were literally trying to just salvage whatever they could. There were people piled up in the Superdome. We remember this. It wasn't that long ago for most of us, unless you're a child. But when you think of what this world is doing spiritually, sometimes it's hard to put an image on it. Sometimes it's hard to put an image on what Noah was talking about when he was talking about destruction. I was meeting with some of the young people on campus, and just how they have an understanding of what it means to live a righteous life, but there's so many people around them, 19, 20, 21, 22 years old, they have no concept of the destruction. They can't hear the warning. We're telling them, but they can't hear the warning. This was actually an overhead view. And I mean, I'm looking at this like, this is just outright terrifying. But they were saying this is right before it actually took landfall. This was a shot from the sky. And interestingly enough, with it being 9/11 today, you can't miss it. It's all over the news and it's all over television. But if you look and you think, what would it have been like if people had been warned? See, we'd like to think that if we warned everybody, that they wouldn't go in, that they'd just leave their homes in New Orleans, or they wouldn't go to the World Trade Center, or they would have taken precautions at the Pentagon. We like to think that, but the fact is, some people, they don't. Some people won't listen. But are we no less obligated to give the warning, to tell people that the storm is coming, to tell people that destruction is coming, just because they may or may not listen? And I find it fitting as we think about the warning that no one had. Somebody said this during Sunday school earlier today, how, the warning didn't come for a lot of people when it came to 9/11. But I want us to think about Noah and his faith, not only to build something, but his faith in saying, I'm still going to be, like he said in 2 Peter, a preacher of righteousness. I'm still going to warn the people what's coming, even though they may not follow. And so I want to close simply by asking a few questions. Is your faith defined by your obedience? Your obedience to everything. Everything that God asks us. What defines your faith? Are we motivated by the world? Do we understand that the world is perishing? Do we actually, kind of like those images we just looked at, do we truly understand that people who do not have a life with Christ, that people who do not have a relationship with God, that they are perishing? Or are we more interested in God's favor? What God would want us to do? What would be pleasing to Him? Is your faith producing action? You know, we've talked about this, and we've talked about this past, month or so since we've been on this topic of faith. But our actions have to show that we're willing to go out and do everything that we're called to do, including being that early warning system that says the storm is coming, get out while you can. Destruction is coming, get out while you can. Now, I know a lot of us in here, so if we knew what was coming on 9/11, clearly we would tell, at the very least, tell our loved ones, don't go there. Don't do it. Something bad is about to happen. I know my God. Don't do it. Stay away. Be safe. No one would not tell their family. No one would not tell their friends and people they love. No one wouldn't warn people about a destruction like 9/11 or Hurricane Katrina if they knew it was coming, if they knew it was going to be as bad as it was. But is that the action that's being produced with our faith? Do we have that conviction? And finally, are we faithful enough to build something? To build something that can be the place of refuge, to be the place of security, the place of safety? Are we willing to put our faith into action the way that Noah did, that can save people from a corrupt and evil generation? Now, I didn't put this up here, but, you know, if you haven't been someone who has given your life to Christ, my question is, what's stopping you from getting on the boat today? What's keeping you from that salvation today? What's hindering you? What are you waiting for? Because just like 9/11, just like Katrina, just like these people in Genesis with Noah, Noah wasn't building something that was for his own glory. This wasn't a Tower of Babel situation. He was building something that was there to save people. We are here to help people get a relationship with God. We are here to help people know what true salvation is, know what true peace is. What's stopping you from following us onto the boat? It said in Genesis where it said that it was seven people. Just basically Noah's family. This is a family here. And as a family, we want to help anybody who doesn't know who Christ is, know who Christ is. We want you to get on the boat with us. We want you to understand what that is. This is a chance. Because we have to have the faith to build something here in Delaware. There are more than plenty of people out there who are lost. There are more than enough people out there for us to go out and be that example and be willing to use our lives and use our words and use our relationships as a means to help others get away from the destruction that's coming. Are you willing to build something as a church that's going to be willing, that's going to be capable of saving? And are you willing to get on the boat? Are you willing to get on board if you haven't chosen to already? Let us stand and sing our song of invitation.